Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
What's going down?
Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the What's Going Down podcast here on Patreon a day early and then in the main feed on Tuesday. My name is Kenny McIntosh and we're here to talk the two nights of WrestleMania 40. I'm joined as always by Mr. Finlay Martin. Finn, how you doing?
Kenny, I'm doing all right, yes. Feeling, I'm not even feeling worn out, even though we've had eight hours of WrestleMania. I thought most of it flew by. I was highly entertained by the majority of it. So, there was some problems with the WWE Network. Of course there were. Mm. But they did sort themselves out. And, you know, overall, the viewing experience was fine. How were you, Kenny? Because you were there live both nights. How was the live experience? Tell the listeners.
So the live experience, I think the first night, the show started off strong with Rhea and Becky and then the ladder match, but there was a definite lull in the middle of the show on the first
night. Yes, there's a dip, yes.
And I think that when Sammy and Gunther came out, there was a real feeling live of like, get us back on track, get us back where we need to be. And they did, thankfully, so that was great. And then the second night was just tremendous, you know, pretty much across the board in terms of just being fun and enjoyable. But I guess one of the biggest takeaways was it was very, very cold.
Oh, it looked like it was. I mean, it was like people were like, there. It was like they were dressed for winter. And you look at people think, you're wearing a T-shirt. Oh, you brought a coat.
I know. Yeah, because we were all like in T-shirt, hoodie and jacket. We were triple layered. And even then, you were still by... It was only really for the kind of last match in both nights that it was really cold. But I know Nick Khan has kind of said that this deal was done before he kind of had full power and it's not going to happen again. They just shouldn't be doing Northeast outdoor at this time of year. It's just a bit too risky. And I think that I have seen some complaints online that the live crowd didn't seem great at points. But I do think how cold it was a factor. So I think had it been a bit warmer, I think you would have heard people be a bit more up for it. But I mean, they were up for it, you know, live. We felt that people were really up for it. So, and there's
Yeah,
actually.
I would agree. I thought they were very vocal. There was times when they weren't, but I think that was almost reflecting what was going on in the ring, and certainly the main events. And given the length of those main events, the first night, 44 minutes and 31 seconds, I think it was. Night two, 33 minutes and 25 seconds. Those were long main events, and you had, lengthy entrances and introductions. I
Yeah.
mean, that main event on night one, all told, between the introduction and the outro, you're talking over an hour, weren't you?
Yeah. And I think that was where, there was a struggle on night one, but night two was shorter, so that worked out better. But let's dive in because there's so much stuff to get through for both nights. So night one, we kick off with the well, now it's the Star Spangled Banner. It's no longer America the Beautiful. So Vince McMahon is really out the door because we're back to the American National Anthem, which he never used to play. And
Yeah.
Coco Jones doing that, she did that. Triple H came out and he sort of said, this is a new era, and just kind of gave us a little rah-rah speech. And that.
He said it's a new time, a new era. Welcome to WrestleMania. Short and sweet. And here's the message. We moved on. Very much echoed what Paul Heyman had said in his, epic, like world-beating speech at the Hall of Fame ceremony the night before, really, that this is a new day in WWE.
Yeah, 100%. And we will, I'm glad you brought that. We will cover Heyman's speech in detail on Powerslam later this week. But, there's so much WrestleMania, you can only fit so much in one podcast. But we
Yes.
open the show with the Rhea Ripley Becky Lynch Women's World Title match. We were both hoping that Rhea Ripley would retain here, but you had said in the lead up that you were concerned for them a little bit, they might not be able to, deliver this as a sort of classic. How did they do in the ring on the night compared to kind of what you thought might happen?
I thought they lived up to expectations. I thought this was going to be a disappointment, and I think it was very fortunate for them that they went on first, which is a great spot, as we saw with Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins on night two. I mean, like, do you think they like draw straws backstage, like who gets to go on first? Because it's a great spot, 'cause the fans are always up for it. But I think they did deliver a lot of action here. I'm not sure if Becky Lynch, they said that Becky Lynch had suffered a bout of strep throat and had a 102 degree temperature. It almost sounded like that was a built-in excuse for her loss. The old Bret Hart Mountie thing, and what they used to have to do for various wrestlers back in the day when they'd turn up for matches completely whacked out of the mind on drugs or whatever. So, I mean, I don't know whether that was for real or it wasn't. It didn't seem to really affect her performance on the night. She didn't seem like she was struggling and was every bit, the Becky Lynch that we thought she would be or hoped she would be at WrestleMania. I thought Rhea Ripley was just came across really strong here and just seemed like the top woman in her division, which she is. And I mean, I guess it could have been a little bit better, the match. But I mean, it's all about pacing. You can't give everything away in every match, otherwise you burn the crowd out. But I think this was very good. Ripley won with for a clean 1-2-3. So it was a decisive win. And I'm curious to see what Becky Lynch says on Raw tonight. What did you make of it, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought they did really well. I was very happy for them. I think that it kind of felt like a this WrestleMania in some ways felt like, we're putting down the stamp on all the newer people. And I saw somebody, I'm kind of giving away a comment here, but about the main event of night two, talking about how, Vince McMahon never really got it right with how to use legends and older stars. He always kind of ended up having them outshine the modern star. And I thought
Yes.
by kicking off WrestleMania with Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch and having Rhea defeat Becky, to me, felt a bit like a mission statement of like, we're not in the era here where we're always going to go back. Not that Becky Lynch is older and can't go anymore, but the message was clear that Rhea Ripley is the future and she won. And she got the big, the band playing her out for her entrance and all that. So she really got the superstar treatment. And I think that was important for her because she, I think she can, go to the moon. She's just great. And I think them going on first, if they're not main eventing, which obviously they weren't going to do because of the tag match, this is the next best spot, really. So,
Yeah, I would agree.
and we saw that night two as well, right? We saw that was kind of echoed night two as well. That, now I think at WrestleMania, I always remember that Edge and Del Rio match at WrestleMania 27, and that felt like a demotion for them. It felt
Oh,
like,
it did, didn't it?
yeah, you won the Rumble, but then you're in the opening match. But now they have changed the kind of the narrative that now the opening match is still a main event. It's not typically what open match would have been 25 years ago or 20 years ago. So,
Yeah, it's all in the presentation, isn't it? And it's just, the company communicates to the fans that this matters, that this is big, that this is not, a warm-up or a appetizer. This is big business here, And yeah, I thought the match did really deliver. Yeah, I thought it probably could have been better, but the pacing, as I say, the pacing is paramount on a wrestling show. You don't want to throw everything out there. And let's face it, they did that in some matches, but you can't do it in every match. Otherwise, the crowd's just fatigued and doesn't react to the other matches later on the show.
For the second match in the show, which was the tag team ladder match, we did get a very funny video with Pretty Deadly.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it? They were a riot, yeah. They really were funny.
Pete Dunne, which is rechristened Pete on. We did see there was two sets of tag type. I've not watched the show back. Or we've had it on in the background, but I've not had a chance to watch with commentary. So obviously you can fill in blanks for me if I don't know. But we pretty much saw when the two titles were separate that this is going to be the way they're going to declassify the Undisputed titles and separate them out. And then
Yeah.
this tag match, which was pretty crazy, we got Austin Theory and Grayson Waller winning the SmackDown tag team titles, and in the end, Miz and R-Truth got their moment and won the Raw tag titles, and that was the end of it. I mean, live, this was just the crowd were lapping this up; they were loving it. It was a big old spot fest. But how did it come across on the telly?
Yeah, I thought it came across really well. I mean, it's DIY versus Miz and R-Truth versus New Catch Republic versus Balor and Priest versus Kingston Woods versus Theory and Waller. And there's some crazy spots here. At one point, Tyler Bate did an airplane spin on Balor. He was actually holding the ladder. Balor was holding the ladder. So that was quite something. I mean, R-Truth did a lot of comedy, which impersonated John Cena, and that just went down a storm with this crowd. This was kind of the comedy match of the evening. But there's also serious elements to it as well. I was really pleased that Waller and Theory captured the SmackDown tag belts here because they had done a lot of jobs in the run-up to this show. And they must have been questioning, what's my future? We were tipped to be like, huge stars. And instead, we're kind of glorified, don't like using the term glorified jobbers, but they were losing to everyone. So that must have been very reassuring for Waller and Theory that they won the belts. After they'd done so, Waller was powerbombed onto a pre-sawn ladder at ringside. And that really cushioned his landing. You could see that they'd sawn it. So, that was really good. So Waller and Theory were then taken out of the race. There's some, huge spot with Ciampa. Tommaso Ciampa did an air raid crash on Bate from near the top of a ladder. That was pretty mad. Pete Dunne was DDT through a table at ringside. That was crazy as well. And in the end, it looked like Priest and Balor were going to retain, but Truth took out Priest with an AA to the floor, which was quite something to see. And then grabbed the Raw belts, and people were like, wow. And it really felt like a joyful, heartwarming moment that these two veterans had won the Raw tag team belts. And, I'm not expecting them to have a long reign, but that doesn't matter. They had the moment here, and this was like the company's way of saying, thanks for your hard work. You've got over, you've provided a lot of entertainment, and here you go. Here's your moment. This will prove probably. Well, that was the pinnacle of R-Truth's career. It's not like Miz is ever going to top this again either in the rest of his career. So, yeah, it felt like a really, really nice moment for Truth and Miz and for the fans as well to observe it.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's kind of important here that to remember is that even though Miz and R-Truth in the ring are borderline diabolical a fair amount of the time as a team, the crowd wanted it. The crowd wanted them to get this moment, and I don't think they could have. I think this was a clever way to have them get their moment Because, we talked about this, a one-on-one or sort of straight-up tag match between Truth and Miz against the Judgment Day, I don't think would have got this reaction. But
No.
having all the bells and whistles, you kind of allow the crowd to go with it. And the R-Truth thing, it's his first match he ever won at WrestleMania. He's won the Raw tag titles. I'm with you. I don't expect it to be long. They might even lose them tonight. But
Yeah.
they got the moment, and I think that was good for the crowd, and everybody was happy with it. So,
Yeah,
we
agreed.
had so this was when the show started to take a dip. So we had Rey Mysterio and Andrade. This was set up on SmackDown because Dragon Lee got injured, so Andrade was in as the replacement. And it's Rey and Andrade against Dominic Mysterio and Santos Escobar. And we had all the seconds out there, Angel Humberto, Elektra and Zelina, Joaquin Cruz and Carlito. Everybody was out there. And they have this match, and it goes about 11 minutes, but live, I think people were just quite exhausted from the ladder match. And
Yeah, they treated this like a buffer match, didn't they? Which is what it essentially was.
I was pretty surprised because I, going into this, was hoping for a lot more, but I think this one was very underwhelming. How was it for you?
Yeah, it was. And I think where they blundered here was there was too much extracurricular activity at the end. There was too many add-ons. Everyone at ringside had to have their spot and their moment. And then two members of the Philadelphia Eagles got involved. And it was just, yeah. I mean, I thought it actually started really well. I thought Escobar and Dom looked really good as they double team Ray. I thought Andrade had a really good night. I thought he looked like a star out there. Everything he did looked tip top. But then we had all this like silliness at the end, and we just seen so much in the tag match. And I think that was, where this match went wrong. If it had just been a straight tag without all the extras, without all the people getting involved to give them their WrestleMania moment, then I think the match would have been viewed more favorably than it was. I think it really fell apart. I wouldn't say it fell apart towards the end, but there's just too much to absorb. So this was very much like a Vince era match to me. It was like, oh, we need to give everyone their moment to shine. And in the end, no one shone. So by the end, I thought they did in the first half of the match, but not the second half. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm with everyone, really. This is where, yeah, the show started going downhill, and which was a shame. And it continued to do so in the Battle of the Brothers next, Kenny.
Yeah, so in the end, the winners of the match were not the fans. Rey and Andrade got the win, but we didn't get the turn that we thought was going to happen from Carlito. There was two masked men who showed up and helped Mysterio and the team win, and it ended up being Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson, who are football players, who are, I think that Johnson is part of the Philadelphia Eagles team, and Jason Kelce, he is the older brother of Travis Kelce, who is in the Kansas City Chiefs football team and also goes out with Taylor Swift. So there was reasons they were there, but if you're a British person who doesn't really follow American football, you're like, who? So you don't really know what's going on.
Yeah,
But
there was already too much going on before they rocked up,
yeah, they just were more people on the top. But yeah, up next we had Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso. Lil Wayne came out to perform for Jey Uso, which, he's a big star. So having Lil Wayne here is a big deal to have somebody like that at WrestleMania. But this match, dear God, it was, I don't want to say it was dire, but it was just.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
You know when you're in when you're in a stadium and you know it's not good, that's a problem. Because in the stadium you have all the atmosphere, so you can kind of let it. You maybe don't know how bad something is till you see it on TV. But there was no heat to it. And I think what we've talked about for months about how the storyline wasn't fleshed out, I think this it suffered for that here. And it was a real letdown, I thought.
Too many super kicks. I felt like I was watching a Young Bucks match. I mean, no one was selling anything for a while, and it was some of almost felt like an indie match in places where you've got people who are just doing too much and not selling anything, so nothing has any impact. And at one point, Jimmy, begged for mercy from Jay, said, "I'm sorry, I was wrong." That's what Jimmy said to Jay, and Jay seemed to accept Jim's apology, only to be then sucker super kicked and hit with a splash, which was supposedly the big moment in the match, and it really wasn't. Jay kicked out a splash and then hit a spear and a splash for the pin. Yeah, it should have been a lot better than it was. Just felt like, you sort of do wonder how these two, as experienced as they are, and having, they obviously main evented WrestleMania last year, they've been in so many big matches, and you do wonder how they could have got this so wrong. But it was just super kick, no sell, super kick, no sell. And it's like there wasn't really a story to the match, or in many ways, even a purpose to it. And I think what they did the next night during their run-in in the main event of night two was actually more memorable than any part of this match.
Do you think? I mean, because we saw Bret and Owen. Oh no! Do you actually? We'll pause that because somebody did ask that as a question for us. Let's cover it on PowerSlam later this week. So I think we can talk about brother versus brother there. So then after that, we had Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, and Naomi against Asuka, Kairi Sane, and Dakota Kai. I mean, Bianca, Jade, and Naomi got this superstar entrance where they're on this big elevated platform. They're made to look like $1 million. Now, I actually missed half of this match because at some point I had to go and get like a Pepsi. So I only saw the first half of it. But talk me through this match and how it kind of compared with what your expectations were going to be of it going in.
Well, I mean, it was no worse than I thought it would be. I mean, it was more about the entrances than the content of the match. It was obvious from the start who was going to win. Jade, Cargill, Naomi, Bianca Belair versus Dakota Kai and Kabuki Warriors. I mean, Naomi did a flowery stuff that takes ages to set up, and then everyone has to stand there waiting for her to like make contact. And some of it did feel quite rehearsed, which I'm sure it was. I mean, Jade was hardly in it until the finish, which, doesn't bode well. She should be doing more. They need to just start using her on a regular basis from this week, henceforth, from this week. She can't be a part-timer anymore. People see her as a star, and I think they want to like her, but she's got to start doing a lot more than she's done so far. I mean, obviously, this was only a second TV match. But I mean, I don't know. It was all about the entrances and the stars. It was kind of like a classic WWE match in the sense that people say, well, people don't really watch wrestling. You say this, Kenny. People don't really watch wrestling or WWE for the wrestling. They watch it for the stars and the characters. And it was one of those type of matches. Almost felt like a bit of a throwback to the old days. An old style WWF match where it wasn't so much about the matches, it was about the hyperbole and the razzmatazz. That was what this match was all about. And in the end, Jade pinned Dakota Kai after Jay did. And yeah, there was no kickouts and no real drama at the end. Just, yeah, kind of predictable, really, Kenny. So you didn't miss much.
There you go. I didn't miss much. What next we had Sami Zayn and Gunther. And going into this, we were both kind of a bit like, oh God, it's Sami Zayn. But I've got to say, on the night in the ring, they turned me round. They did this really good, sort of thing of Sami backstage talking to his wife and his son. And it's just this one shot of him talking to his wife and his son backstage, then him bumping into Chad Gable. Then him seeing Kevin Owens at Gorilla Position, then them hugging, then him coming out. And they had this match with Sami and Gunther. And by the end, I found myself invested and wanted Sami Zayn to win, which I had no desire for him to win before. So they won me round, Finn. Maybe I was Stockholm syndromed into it on this occasion, but they managed to twist my arm. How did you feel watching it?
Yeah, I mean, it was tremendous. It was yet another blinder from Gunther. He said as he came out that he'd been champion for 666 days. So I don't know whether there's any significance in that or not. Sammy's wife was in the front row, and they kept seeking her responses, and I thought she was really good actually. She really, ratchets up the drama. She really cranked up the drama. With Gunter yelling at her and mocking her as he beat down her husband, and Sammy played that sort of great babyface character that he does, which is really good at seeking eliciting sympathy, while having that never say die sort of attitude and demeanor. And he did look like Gunter was going to retain. I mean, he had Sammy beaten down and ostensibly beaten. And then Sammy came back with this incredible brainbuster on the top rope and hit the Helluva kick. And the unthinkable happened. One, two, three, became champion. So, yeah, I didn't see this one coming. And I've got to say, after Zayn beat Gunther, it all did make sense because Gunther's time as IC champ, is longest reigning champ ever. There was nothing really more for him to do with the championship. So he's going to now go on to bigger and better things. And we'll see what Zayn does with it. But yeah, it was yet another feather in a feather-filled cap that Gunther wears. He's going to need a hat as big as the one that Seth Rollins wore when he came out on night two for all the feathers in it. Yeah, it was a hell of a match. And yeah, turn the show around here. And I was glad to be wrong, that Zayn really did seem like a worthy winner, and on the night was absolutely the man to end Gunther's record-breaking reign. And I was saying quite the reverse in the run-up to this match.
And I think it's also good to see that all the time that people had spent getting behind Sami Zayn last year, in February and March, that it's not all gone away. And I think that that goodwill was there for him, and it kind of came back on the night. So it
Oh,
was
yeah.
good to see him win. We then had, and Gunther's IC title reign, we should kind of give plaudits to that because he has just absolutely smashed it. And I don't know if he's the one the most, but I think Vince, everything happening with Vince, I don't know if it benefits many more people than it benefits Gunther, because he's under Vince. I don't know. I mean, obviously he got himself in way better shape, which Vince would have liked, so it wouldn't
Yeah.
have been as bad as if he'd come up in 2019 or whatever. But yeah, I think he's just the fact that it's a Triple H year is so good for him. And we get the draft coming up in a month, so he could end up on SmackDown, he could end up some on Raw. But I think, yeah, I can't imagine he's not a world champion within the next 18 months.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be vying for that next. It was the right time for him to, basically losing the belt. Very much like Luke Brett when Brett lost the belt to Davey Boy Smith at SummerSlam 92. Brett was at the time was like, wow, what does Brett do next? And then he went on to become WWF champion less than 2 months later. I don't think it's going to happen that quickly for Gunther, but that's obviously the direction he's going in.
So it's main event time for night one. So we have Cody Rhodes come out first. He's got a kind of standard entrance because there's another one planned for night two that we'll get to. He gives his mum a kiss. She's in the front row. He gives a weight belt to his father-in-law. And then Seth Rollins comes out. He's got this crazy big robe with a big shoulder piece, like he's walking the Paris Fashion Week or something. And then.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite a statement, wasn't it? That gold and blue robe. I mean, suffice it to say, Seth made slightly more of an effort for the occasion than Carlito had earlier on the show.
Ever so slightly. Then we had this massive Brahma Bull logo appear in the middle of the screen, and basically it was the all this kind of electricity and the idea that you're in a video game, and they're engaging the final boss mode, and then Rock comes out. There's a flaming Brahma Bull logo he has to step over. He's got his people's title belt that we'll discuss on Thursday that he got from Muhammad Ali's wife. And he's got this kind of, fancy sleeveless shirt on. He's got flares, which is bizarre. And then Roman Reigns comes out with his kind of standard entrance as well. I mean, the entrance, j just even them coming out here, I know it took like 15 minutes or whatever for them to all come out, but You were just like, this is what it's all about. You know, this is what you're here to see. You're here to see the
It's,
big
yeah,
names
exactly.
doing this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, happily, I mean, we got that obviously in this in the women's the six woman match earlier, but we just didn't get the match. You know, whereas with this, we got the match as well as the entrances.
So the match went a long time. I think the match time I've got down here is 44 minutes, and where's the time? 44:35.
31 seconds by my reckoning. 44:31, I just by my reckoning anyway.
44:31, and I mean, I think live the first half of it was tough because of the factors from earlier. But talk me through how it was on TV, kind of the slow start, building up, then all the stuff in the second half that kind of gave the drama. What did you think of the pacing in the match?
It was, I mean, fans did. I mean, there were a few problems here, and like alarm bells were going off as this match progressed. I mean, fans booed Cody as he beat down The Rock, particularly when he's prevented Rock from executing the people's elbow. I mean, he should have anticipated that one. That was a bit of a blunder. I mean, there was a lot of selling here by Rollins. He saw the left knee. I thought he did a really good job there. I mean, it was slow, absolutely, for that first 20 minutes, no doubt about it. And we had, you know, various things on the outside. Rock told the referee that he would be fired if he counted them out. And then later on, Rock and Reigns started breaking the rules, and the same applied, and the referee just had to let it go. So, I mean, if you were, you know, if you're pedantic about it, I can understand that that would annoy you because this was the match to determine whether or not Bloodline rules would be in play the following evening in the title match. And effectively, we had Bloodline rules here, didn't we, in the tag match? You know, Rock just made them up on the spot. So if you want to complain about that, I couldn't argue with you. I mean, it didn't really bother me that much because I think it's just part of, you know, The Rock's tyrannical final boss character. And, you know, I know we're not really going to mention his name anymore, but this is not dissimilar to Vince McMahon, his character back in the day, is it?
No, I think you're right, but I agree with you though, because I think, you know, we are the first to call out, you know, AEW referees or whatever when something doesn't make sense. And I think they did miss a trick by having just something that could kind of make this make a bit more sense, in terms
Yeah.
of it just being no rules. But you know, I mean, I guess you could argue Rock's the board member of TKO, so when he tells the referee, "Don't you dare count," the referee has to listen because it's technically his boss. But
Well, that's all part of the character that he's playing, isn't it? And we know it's real because we've seen the filings, haven't we? With the Securities and Exchange Commission. So it all does play into what's really happened and what is really happening. So I do get it. I mean, it's not that it's nonsense. It's just, if that kind of feels like they moved the goalposts, which of course they did. And in many ways, Kenny, it was the right thing to do because Rock's so entertaining in this character that of course he's turning himself face, isn't he, every week? So he has to be, you know, even more villainous in order to provoke the reaction that they're seeking from the audience. You know, this has historically always been the problem, hasn't it? If a heel becomes too entertaining, then people start cheering him and then they start booing the face, and that's a big problem. So, but I mean, here, I mean, as the match progressed, Rock and Reigns were even more evil and rotten and dastardly. So I think by the end, fans were booing the right people and cheering the right people. You know, yeah, there was the big people's elbow interception, which, you know, which was a big error, I felt. But I mean, they got over it. You know, the big spot for me, which really turned this match around, was when Reigns accidentally speared The Rock. That was a hell of a moment in the match. And then Reigns and Cody, sorry, then Rollins and Cody hit double pedigrees on Reigns and Rock, and that was a mega false finish. That was amazing. And I was just imagining if Pat Patterson was still around, he would have popped for that one backstage because he was the guy he was the layout ace, wasn't he, back in the day?
Yeah,
And
he would.
I don't know, for some reason, I just thought about him at that moment. And that was to me what turned this match around and turn it from being, you know, okay to being like, you know, a worthy WrestleMania main event.
Yeah, and then from there, you know, it just went from strength to strength. After that point, we had, you know, Rock kind of trying to goad Cody's mum, and she's just, you know, screaming at him that she hates him. And, you know, then Rock's going to try and rock bottom Cody through the announce table, but Seth grabs the foot. So then Cody takes advantage and then put Rock through a table with a rock bottom. And then Rollins spears Reigns at the timekeeper area, so everybody's down. And, yeah. You know, it's now it's a WrestleMania main event and everyone's there. And Cody then again gets the upper hand. He's hitting the crossroads on Reigns. You hit him up for a second one, then picks him up for a third. And The Rock whacks him in the back with the weight belt, the Mama Rhodes weight belt. Reigns spears Cody, but Rock holds out the hand, tags in. Rock bottom, people's elbow after he does a throat slash gesture. And The Rock pins Cody Rhodes 1-2-3 to end night one and have them win. I mean, I think you could say the match was too long. And I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think you could have shaved 10 minutes off it easily. But I think...
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but I think, you know, once it gets to the big stuff, I think you can forgive it at that point.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, but you could say that about a lot of classic old Japan matches back in the 90s, you know, which were 30 minutes plus. And you think, wow, it didn't need that first 8 minutes. But in some ways, they sort of do, to take you to the brilliance of the ending. And you shave that, you know, 10 minutes off, would it have been as good? It might not have been. But yeah, this was a long match, 44 and a half minutes. I mean, that was an epic. But I think, you know, what was really amazing about this match was just the fans were totally with it at the end. They were totally into the action. They were glued to the ring.
Yeah.
And, you know, the big moves at the end got the biggest responses. It was the right outcome. Of course, the heels had to win, so it would be Bloodline rules on night two, even though it's kind of Bloodline rules on night one as well. And, you know, afterwards, Cody sat on the mat. He was distraught. You know, Rollins was there in agony. He looked glum as well, despairing, crestfallen. So it was exactly the right response from the players. You know, the faces looked, all, you know, they had an even larger mountain to climb the next night. And the heels were there. We won, you know, we're amazing, you know, job done type thing. So I thought it was a big success, the match. Huge success on the night, actually. And hilariously, Kenny, as Rock, Reigns and Heyman were celebrating on the ramp, someone in the crowd held up a sign which read, "Bring back the Iconics." And yeah, presumably that was irony, but that amused me anyway.
Bring back the Iconics. Jesus Christ. Well, you know what? Maybe this will be their return. Maybe somebody's time will force Triple H to get them back. Anyway, so let's move on to night two. I think night one was definitely good, but I think it was like a two bookends thing because the middle was tough. But night two, I think did deliver a lot more. We opened the show. CM Punk actually came out at the end of the pre-show to be on commentary for the opening match on the main show. So the pre-show, you got to see him come out first. Then we had another America the Beautiful performance by... it was God Bless America this time. By
God Bless America.
By the War and Treaty. And what a performance by these two. Just... I mean, live, it was just like, these two people can sing. They belted out. So, good for them.
Oh, absolutely.
Then we had Stephanie McMahon making her return. She came out to a big reaction. She'd also been at the Hall of Fame in the front row in ECW Beret. And she said, you know, she's here because, you know, this is the first WrestleMania of the Paul Levesque era. She did the Are You Ready routine. And... it's interesting, right? Because this is the first Vince-less WrestleMania and she came out here and it felt like she was in some way putting her support behind Triple H and Paul Levesque, and fans seemed to be into it.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have been making a lot of, you know, comments about, you know, the strength of the Stephanie and Paul Levesque relationships, a lot of unfounded rumours out there. And I think this was very much a united front. And you can understand it. You know, I've said about the grandkids, this must have just been awful for them. Stuff that's come out, that was the accusations that came out in January. And really the last near 2 years, really. And, you know, it must have been rough on Stephanie and Paul Levesque as well. So I think they, you know, they were putting on a united front here. And I was sort of surprised that Shane McMahon wasn't there as well, Kenny, actually. You know, just for like a family unity thing. I thought he might, because it's a year now, isn't it, since he suffered the injury.
It is. Maybe he just didn't want to be there in case he like walked into the ring and broke his arm. Just like
getting well, maybe ring. So, yeah. But yeah, you would. I mean, that it would have actually been a real, probably a moment for him as well, for them all to just, you know, come together and, you know, we're solid and, you know, we're not that guy. You know, we are not that guy. You know, so maybe they're leaving that for a later date. I don't know. But yeah, this was, it was, yeah, she seemed, she said, didn't she, that she'd either worked out or been part of every WrestleMania since she was a child. And I think this was, you know, a big moment for her. And, you know, she seemed like she wanted to be there and, you know, she was doing her bit for her husband. So good for her.
So we get the big entrances for Drew and Seth. Drew was first. We had a group of bagpipe players and we had, you know, loads of people holding up swords and Drew comes out and it's just a superstar entrance. And then for Seth Rollins, we have a string band and we have this crew of people. I don't even know how to describe them, Finn. Like, there was just, it was about 100 people who were all dressed like, what were they dressed like? Wizards? I mean, they were just...
almost like sort of from the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. It was almost like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, it was just bizarre. But I mean, it kind of does fit in with the Seth Rollins character, so it did make sense. You know, just batshit.
It was mad. It was mad. And you're thinking, wow, look at all those people. There's just so many of them. That, and the costumes were out of this world, weren't they? And even more outrageous than Seth's.
And you think, you know, these people, how are they all getting in Gorilla? Gorilla's not that big. Gorilla position's not that big. And you've got all these people in both. But anyway, it was great. These entrances were just like top tier, 10 out of 10. So then we got Seth and Drew for the World Heavyweight title, and immediately when the bell rings, Drew hits Rollins with a Claymore kick and covers him for a near fall. I mean, that just set up the tone, right? Yeah. Totally different from the main event of night one that took a wee while to get going. This was like, we're in from the moment it starts. And there's a lot of false finishes in the match, a lot of back and forth. Rollins was selling the knee, and but in the end, Drew McIntyre, after numerous Claymore kicks, managed to hit another one on Rollins and get 1-2-3, and Drew won the World Heavyweight title in a stadium in front of people, Finn. What could possibly go wrong for Drew?
What could possibly go wrong for Drew? You know, he won. I mean, we predicted it. We said, this is going to happen, and he did. And yeah, I mean, yeah, Drew hit the Claymore from the bell for this near fall, and it's high octane from that point forward. The entirety of the match was just like, rocket powered by rocket fuel, and you know, Drew attacked the left knee that Rollins had, you know, been injured in the storyline the night before, and obviously been injured for real as well. And Rollins hit the stomp, Drew kicked out of the pedigree in a stomp, Rollins kicked out of the future shock DDT. CM Punk was on commentary, should mention, so they brought that up at the time. And saying to CM Punk, well, that was the move that sidelined you. And he's like, yeah. And, you know, Drew was there just staring down Punk, and Punk was promoting his forthcoming match with Drew throughout on commentary. So that was really good. I think in the end, Drew won after a fourth Claymore. And they were both like in tears afterwards. You can see this was very emotional for Drew and for Seth Rollins. So, yeah, it was quite a match, really. And then afterwards...
Okay, I mean, yes, you know, Drew Seth, went... Seth, the way that Seth spoke to Drew, I couldn't mouth exactly what his words were. I knew he said, you deserve it or whatever. But he felt so... It's weird because Seth Rollins is this guy who has a character, is a bit of a joke sometimes. But on this weekend, he really grafted, and I think he just showed a lot more of himself than he usually does. And I think he actually is kind of one of the unsung people of the weekend for me, because he really
Oh
helped a
yeah,
lot of other people.
absolutely. Yeah, of course. Absolutely. I mean, he was there to further things. He was not the central player. The spotlight wasn't on him. He's had that before, and I'm sure he'll have it again. And it was this weekend was his duties were to put others over and make them shine. And he did that, extraordinarily, well, not extraordinarily well, because he is an extraordinary talent. But he did it, to the standard that I would expect from him. But afterwards, yeah, I mean, Rollins was, you could see his, this thing about pro wrestling, there's a lot of it is very real, even though the outcomes are predetermined. So much of what happens in wrestling is not fabricated or it's not make believe. It is real to the people who are involved in it. And in many ways, it's real to the people who are watching it as well. Because we, are kind of living vicariously through them. So, I mean, Rollins, yeah, I mean, Rollins was, you could see he was really emotional afterwards. And I think he was probably really chuffed that the match had gone so well, which it had. And then Drew had won the belt in front of fans. And then he started, this is taunting CM Punk, and CM Punk beat him up. And then what happened next, Kenny?
And then, see, because he's literally on the announce table, goading CM Punk and all this. And then Punk just like sweeps his leg, takes off the suit jacket, takes off the arm cast, and then beats the shit out of Drew. He's kicking him and he's doing all this. And then, of course, Damian Priest's entrance music hits and he runs out of the briefcase. And Drew gets in there and Priest just, rolls him in. Hits the choke slam. 1, 2, 3. Damian Priest is the new champion. Punk is applauding Priest at ringside. The Judgment Day are all there. And what I love about this is that you could so easily have done this in a way that made Drew look like a chump to lose straight away. But the way they did it
Yeah.
was setting loads of stuff up. And that if he had just, because Drew goes and kisses his wife, and he actually like just wrote a live tweet going, "Bored at work, lol." And put out then and there. But the whole story is that he couldn't help himself. He couldn't just go to the back and he'd have been the champion. He had
Yeah.
to go and goad CM Punk. And then,
Yeah.
Punk actually did an interview on ESPN right after Mania. He was like an analyst. And the guy said, "You know, you've got anything you want to say to Drew McIntyre?" And he sort of looked down the camera and said, "You prayed for me to be injured, so I'm going to make your life a living hell." And that's the story. So I think that what they set up is so interesting. And also, does Drew need some backup now? Because if he's
Well, yeah, I was thinking that as well, actually, because Judgment Day, will they? Presumably, it's going to be Drew versus Damian Priest at Clash at the Castle, I would think. Because I don't think, even though CM Punk sort of looked like he was almost ready to return, there's a big difference between what he did at the desk and taking bumps and all. They're not going to rush his comeback. There's no way he's going to be back before, I wouldn't have thought, end of July. It's going to be 6 months, isn't it? Surely.
Yeah, but even with this, they've given you know, there's also loads of questions. You could interpret what Punk here did as the beginning of a heel turn. You could
Yes.
loads of ways, and that's I'm the most excited about wrestling. I don't know where it could go, but I'm confident enough in who's doing it that I can relax and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, this could actually in many ways be the start of, the Drew face turn, which could happen at Clash at the Castle when he regains the belt, which presumably he will. He might not. He might regain the belt from Damian Priest in Glasgow. I hope he does. And if he's got Gallus supporting him, that'd be a great night for all those guys because they'll be natural faces, obviously. And then you could potentially have CM Punk coming out and staring down Drew, leading to a match the next month or the month after, whenever Punk's cleared for duty. They're not going to rush this because he's obviously got the history of injuries, and they're just going to have to take it easy with Punk. I mean, if he suffers another injury right after he returns, that is going to be devastating for him, mentally to come back from. So I don't think they're going to rush it at all, and nor should they, because he's very effective in this role of not wrestling, but just tormenting Drew McIntyre. But yeah, I mean, it was on the night I was a little bit, you know, I was thinking, ah, it's a shame for Drew, but he can still say that he won and he can still say he had his moment. And if this leads to a win at Clash of the Castle and another reign and a face turn, you know, that then leads to the feud with Punk, then you've extended, you know, the good times, haven't you?
100%. Well, listen, let's keep going. Let's truck along here. So up next, we had the Philadelphia street fight between the Final Testament and Lashley and the Street Profits. They had Bubba Ray Dudley as the guest referee because they're in Philadelphia, so, you know, it makes sense to have someone of an ECW ilk there.
Yeah, and he was obviously part as well of the Paul Heyman Hall of Fame speech. He was there and on camera more than once.
Yeah, so and I thought as a Philadelphia street fight, I'm not going to lie to you and say that I loved it, but it was definitely way more tolerable than I thought it was going to be going in. And the crowd seemed to, you know, eat it up. They liked the tables coming out, liked all that. And Lashley and the Profits won. So, I mean, compared to compared to what we thought it was going to be, Finn, it wasn't as painful as we thought.
No, I thought it would be okay. And they were in a tough spot here because so much had happened in that opening match and the then second match with Priest beating Drew McIntyre. They were in a tough spot. And I think it was very sensible to put the street fight on and include Bubba Ray as the ref. I think that gave it a nice little lift. It wasn't a long match, nor should it have been. B-Fab and Scarlett, they had, you know, some involvement, but not too much. It wasn't totally over the top like the previous night's tag match had been. Towards the end, they brought a table into the ring because Montez Ford was going to splash Karrion Kross through it and the table collapsed and everyone booed. And it actually worked in the match's favour because the Street Profits went and got a second table, brought it in, set it up again, and actually it magnified, you know, the volume of the pop because people had to wait a little bit longer and they just managed to, you know, work around that unexpected, you know, prop malfunction. So, yeah, Lashley ended up pinning Cross after Ford has splashed into a table. So, yeah, I thought it was okay for what it was. Didn't outstay its welcome and fun little match, Kenny.
Yes, which then leads us into LA Knight against AJ Styles. They actually had a really fun brawl at the press conference on Friday morning when I was there. I was two behind
him. Oh, my God, did you see that? I was watching it. They put the footage on Twitter and I felt like making the comment, this is what pro wrestling would look like if no one was cooperating. It just said they weren't really doing anything, would it?
No, not at all. Not at all. But I mean, it looked really good. When I was there at the press morning, I was, you know, in the queue to speak to LA Knight, and then they just start fighting, and it felt like a fight. It felt like they were really not liking each other. And then, so we have the match here, LA Knight and AJ Styles. They go about 12 minutes, 12 and a half minutes. LA Knight gets the win in the end. What did the match deliver on the night?
I actually felt like it should have been a little bit longer. But Fat Knight was really over. I mean, Styles had a good night. I mean, he's massive. I don't want to cast any aspersions, Kenny. I don't want to cast any aspersions, but I've never seen him that big ever. Have you?
No, I've not.
I'm not casting any aspersions. The guy's well into his 40s. I mean, there were some really good moves in here. I thought it was well put together for what it was. Could have done with a few more minutes, I think. But really good match. Fans were really behind Knight. They wanted him to win. He did after BFT. I thought he did what he was supposed to do. And a nice win there for Knight. And hopefully they got something big lined up for him. Maybe Logan Paul at SummerSlam. But I also hope that AJ Styles gets his reward. Because I think he's done a lot lately. But he don't really feel like he's going anywhere, Kenny.
No. It's... I think for LA Knight, it was good for him to get the win. You know, he needs it. And I think AJ, there is stuff he could do. I thought he had a decent performance here, but he needs some storyline help stat. He needs that very.
Yes, I agree. He does, absolutely.
So we find out we're going to have the King and Queen of the Ring, PLE, in Saudi Arabia on May 25th. So that's coming up. We then got the Hall of Fame ceremony. Inductees coming out, so they all come out. How good does Bill Nakano look, Finn?
I mean, oh wow,
she just looks great. The fact that she did the face paint thing, I just thought was great. So good for her.
I mean, she went out there after Paul Heyman and spoke in English, and like, wow, you know what I mean? The fact that she was able to do that, and she didn't really say that much, but she said enough, and people were really respectful. And what a position to be in, having to follow Paul Heyman at the Hall of Fame ceremony. Unbelievable. But yeah, good for her.
So up next, we have the US title, Logan Paul, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, and they all have this match. It was actually really funny because near the beginning of the match, Kevin Owens comes out with a golf cart thing, and he ends up going back up the ramp to get Randy Orton, bring him down, like he's bringing his pal down to work. And kind of near the beginning of the match, Orton goes for an RKO, and then, you know, Owens shoves him away, and Orton's like, oh, sorry, pal, you know, like, didn't mean it, which was actually really funny. And then that kind of got the match going proper, because the three of them were then all against each other, and it ended up going just over 17, no, it was almost just under 18 minutes was the kind of final time. And in the end, we all kind of thought would happen is that Orton does this, because Owens goes for a pop-up powerbomb on Orton, but he counters it into an RKO, which just looked amazing. But then Logan Paul throws Randy Orton at the ring, hits Owens with his top rope frog splash, and retains his title. So he also did that with the help of somebody who was also dressed up in a Prime bottle, and it's a guy called Speed, who is a YouTube guy and a TikToker. So he had some help there. But Logan Paul wins.
He got RKO'd on the table, didn't he, by Randy Orton? Yes.
I thought the match was good. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, before the match, Sami Zayn saw Owens and said, you know, it's your turn now. It's your moment to shine. And I thought everyone had a great night here. As we predicted, Logan Paul would retain the championship. I think that was absolutely the right decision, because he's got so much left to do as champion. And I think he really enhances this championship and WWE with his, you know, part-time involvement. And I thought Owens and, you know, Owens, whenever you think of Owens, you know, he obviously, you know, in many ways laid his WrestleMania ghosts to rest 2 years ago in the Austin match, didn't he? And, you know, we always got memories, haven't we, of the famous Vince and Owens interaction backstage. Was it after the Jericho match? I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
And like, I mean, that was just, obviously it wasn't Vince at his worst, but it was Vince probably at his worst as a boss. You know, you're not exactly motivating people if you're treating them like that at WrestleMania, are you?
No.
You know, it's your job as a boss to bring out the best in people. So, I mean, this was, Owens and Orton, I thought, had a great night. Everything looked good. I mean, there were moments there where you could tell that Paul's not a time served pro, but he's getting better every match. And that frog splash at the end on Owens was just awesome. And I thought this was absolutely blinding. This was just a WrestleMania match on so many levels. Like Owens, for instance, kicking out the RKO. You know, that's only allowed to happen at WrestleMania, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, you can't do that all the time, but, you know, on these big nights, you can kind of get away with doing a bit more. So
yeah, absolutely. You know, that's the WrestleMania rules. You can kick out the big moves. If you're doing that on SmackDown and Raw and house shows, then those finishers are then going to be ruined. You know, they're going to be torpedoed and the efficacy is going to be diminished. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of ridiculous, I guess, when Orton kicked out Paul's brass knuckles shot, but he did sell a lot afterwards. And again, WrestleMania rules, so you can kick out more than you would do ordinarily.
So up next, we had Bayley against Io Sky for the women's title. Bayley actually came out in some sort of like Egyptian gear, and she had four masked men carrying her. And then Io Sky comes out as well, damage control, the base state at the back. I've got to say, I'm so happy to say I was wrong, because I thought Bayley and Io Sky really nailed this, and in a way I didn't think they were gonna or could in this scenario. It was such a cold feud coming in, but I thought they really did well, and I was really happy on the night that they were able to take what sometimes can be a death spot and actually get people really into it. So I was very happy for Bayley that she was able to get a moment that, you know, I know she'd been hoping for.
I mean we weren't hopeful, were we, Kenny? We weren't optimistic about this one.
No.
And I've got to say, after the US title match and how well received that was, and, you know, this long winding story that they told, Bayley and Io Sky right before the main events, it did seem to be a tall order for them to be able to turn what was, a rather uninspiring, hype job into a, WrestleMania worthy title match. And I think they delivered that. I think also you've got to give them a lot of credit, Kenny, for overcoming the crowd, who I felt were very disrespectful. That just never ended. Yeah. I mean, it just went on and on, that, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there was actually a guy who got kicked out during this match because he tried to say women's wrestling sucks or something, and he ended up getting chucked out of the building. So, things have changed.
What an idiot! Well, I'm glad he was thrown out. What a fool! What a buffoon, Kenny! And I mean, what a thing. I don't know. Some people, you've gone to wait all your life, maybe, or at least all year to go to WrestleMania, spent a ton of money, and then you behave like that and get thrown out. You deserve it. I mean, but in the end, the audience stopped singing and paid attention to the match. And yeah, I mean, the ending of this was just like, wow, they brought it. They were like, this is what we can do. We're okay. We might have had some mediocre matches, and people might not really care about our feud, but we're gonna make you care because our match is gonna be so damn good. And it was. And in the end, even Michael Cole on commentary was cheering Bayley on, urging her to win, and she did so with the Rose plan. And you can tell this was possibly, the night of Bayley's life. It was so meaningful to her, and just harking back to what I said earlier about, how real these things are. And obviously, winning a championship, okay, you're not winning it, because it's booked and predetermined and blah, blah, blah. But in order to get into that position in the first place, you've got to be very good at your job. You've got to be very successful. You have a connection with the audience, and you've got to convince a hell of a lot of people backstage that you're worth it. So yeah, real huge success on the night. And I was really pleased for Io Sky as well, Kenny, because I thought she had a great night.
Yeah, 100%. So it's time for the main event, and they got the big entrances as well, because I should mention we had Snoop Dogg do the attendance record as well. Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce did it the first night. So Cody comes out, he's got this like big massive entrance, he's got a big American Nightmare mask on, Brandi Rhodes is with him, and it's just so, so nice. And then we see that, he's there greeting his mum, he's greeting Brody Lee Jr., and you've got to think, I mean, what he's done to kind of keep his promise is really, really great, when he was there,
yeah,
passing away, and promised to take care of his son, and he made sure he was there, and even at the end he was involved. So, I mean, a stand-up guy through and through, Cody.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns then comes out with Paul Heyman while they have an orchestra play his theme song. I mean, this is just why you watch wrestling, to see this kind of stuff.
You were talking earlier about Gorilla not being very big. I mean, the entire stage was filled with violinists, people with cellos, drums, it just went on and on and on. It's like, just wow, where have all these people come from?
Okay, it's funny because we were in the building during the Bayley and Io match, like 50 chairs were set out, and we're like, what the hell is this? And it was only when, I think when Cody was coming out, you just saw all these people with massive cellos and all that running out. You're like, Jesus Christ. But yeah, so great entrances. And then the match itself was just top tier. Cody and Roman are going at it. They're going back and forth. It's just the two of them. And then, of course, eventually, it's Jimmy Uso who turns up. And Jimmy Uso turns up.
Yeah.
He is, super kicks Cody because Cody sort of almost has it in the bag. He hits the crossroads, he's about to hit it again. Jimmy appears, super kick. Then Reigns hits Cody with a Superman punch. And then Jey Uso's music plays. He runs down. They start fighting. They're brawling. And then they brawl up the ramp. And then Jimmy gets speared by Jey off the stage through a table, which, in 2 minutes, they managed to do something 10 times more impactful than their entire match the night before. So,
yes, indeed.
Say what you can about that. Then Solo Sikoa shows up to save Reigns again, and he hits the Simone Spike, Reigns spears Cody, and then John Cena's music hits, and he comes down, he's throwing punches to Solo, clothesline Solo outside, hits Reigns with an attitude adjustment, hits Solo with one through a broadcast table outside. How did you, I mean, before we get to the next part, how do you think Cena looked here? Did he look up to the up to par here for what the role was going to entail?
Yeah, he did do. Yeah, we were concerned that, he was going to come out and lark around, but to his credit, he recognized that this was not a night for fooling around and Cena style buffoonery, and he took it very seriously. And I was expecting an appearance by Cena after Solo appeared and did the spike to Cody, and it appeared to be curtains for him, and he wasn't going to finish his story. And obviously, after Solo had handed John Cena that crushing loss last year, it was fitting that Cena would be the one to save Cody here. And yeah, I mean, he wasn't in the match that long. Everything was really fast. Everything he did actually looked really good. And he was there to take out Solo and then set up the Rock's running. And then Rock took out Cena, didn't he? So the merry-go-round continued, right, Kenny?
Yes, the merry-go-round continued. So then the Rock's music hit, and I mean, can I just say this match is one of the, I would say, top five, maybe top three live experiences I've ever had at a wrestling show. You just couldn't make it up. You're just smiling from ear to ear because it's like Christmas, it's like a Christmas for
Yeah.
wrestling people, and you just
Oh yeah, it was incredible. It was outstanding. This mania was, I think this mania was the best I've ever seen. I mean, I guess 2022 was really good as well, but I think this main event was just like, wow. I mean, it was just so perfect in every way.
Yes, because Rock comes out here, so then you get the big face off of Rock and Cena that you never thought you'd see again. And then Cena takes his t-shirt off. I mean, unfortunately not had the suntan beds, which would have been nice, but that is what it is. And then Rock Cena does the You Can't See Me. I'm gonna be polite and not talk about John Cena's hair, but we've all seen it. You can just get to Turkey. Do you know what I mean? Just get to Turkey, John. It's getting worse every time you come back.
I mean, the next item of merchandise is, of course, the Cena sunglasses, to protect us from the light, from the Cena's bald patch on the back of his head, blinding us all.
Oh God, it gets bigger every time. Anyway, so Cena and Rock are having their face off. Cena does the You Can't See Me, so then Rock hits Cena with the Rock Bottom, and then Rock's taking the weight bit off. It's got Mama Rhodes on it. Then the Shield music hits, and like, you're like, who the, what is this? And then the Rock's looking around, and then Seth Rollins shows up in Shield gear. He's got a chair, and then Reigns takes Rollins out of a Superman punch, and then
I
Rock's.
mean, this was Rollins taking another one for the team, wasn't it? He didn't get any offense in at all. He just got wiped out.
Nothing. And he so Rollins gets wiped out, then the Rock's about to whip Cody, then the gong goes off, and you're like, what the fuck is going on now? And it that you could argue Undertaker was beaten by Roman Reigns at WrestleMania a few years ago, so there's you can
Yeah.
put something in there.
Yeah, I mean, I was half expecting Steve Austin at this point.
Yes, I think that's
I
the
was half
only thing.
expecting Austin.
I think that's the only thing. If you put a small asterisk, I think people were expecting him, because he was on that truck from the other week. I don't know if he was going to do something, and then he just didn't want to do it. But I think people were expecting him. But Taker, is a worthy replacement to that role. He,
Yes.
the lights go off, the lights come on, he's there. He's not dressed in all the dead man gear. He's dressed in a kind of all black, almost bikery Undertaker type thing.
And so he should be, because we've seen him interviewed so many times now, and he's not that guy anymore, is he? And ever since the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, he can never be that character again. This is the post-retirement Undertaker, and people popped huge for him, and he's still in great shape, so it's believable that he would be a more than a match for The Rock, wasn't it?
Exactly. So then Undertaker choke slams the Rock, and then there's all these callbacks. We get a callback up next to something that happened 10 years ago, because we have Reigns. Reigns is there, and he's got Cody and Rollins. So then Reigns slams the chair over the back of Rollins, and it's done as a sort of mirror image to when Rollins did it to Reigns when he split on the Shield 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just perfect. What a long-term storytelling nod that you get there. And then afterwards, Roman lets out this war cry, but Cody catches him with a kick, and he hits Reigns with three crossroads. There's nobody left to save him. Everybody's gone. And Cody Rhodes wins, and he becomes the new Undisputed Universal Champion. And he, you know, every babyface comes out. They've got Brandy, the family, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, LA Knight, Cena, Rollins, Jey Uso, CM Punk comes out. We've got everybody. Hands the belt to his mum. He brings out Bruce Pritchard and Triple H. So they're there, and everybody's putting Cody on his shoulders, and he's hugging Michael Cole, and it was just perfect.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the celebration just never ended. I mean, there was, when he mentioned Bruce Pritchard, there was a few boos for that, but happily, Paul Levesque, people like him. So, you know, he came out and, yeah, just felt like, you know, they would said this is the whole thrust of the weekend from the Hall of Fame ceremony onwards was this is a new era. This was something Paul Heyman mentioned in his speech, and it was something that Levesque had mentioned on night one and Stephanie had mentioned on night two. And this was very much, you know, the theme of this celebration that we've turned the page. You know, things have changed. We're moving on. And this is our guy now. Cody Rhodes is the man who's going to carry the torch. He's the flagship now. And that was something he carried on as well in the press conference, wasn't it, afterwards? And he was just mentioning the investment in the company and just saying that, you know, if I could be half the champion that Roman Reigns was, then I'll be happy, because Reigns was an incredible champion, an incredible performer. And, you know, what a performance by Reigns. Just outstanding. Just a tour de force by both. And, just one of the best matches I've ever seen as a fan. Just absolutely breathtaking. It really was.
And, it was just... And, you know, Cody is the sort of guy who is just... He deserves this so much. I'll give you an example, right? I wouldn't usually say this on a podcast, but fuck it, I'll just say it. So this morning, I was so kind of moved by everything that last night that I text Cody, right, to say congratulations to him. Kind of said, you know, you deserve it. You deserve all this stuff. Because he really does. And you know what his response was within 2 minutes to text back? He said...
How did he respond?
He said, "You're getting married? ?" That was his response. You know, he made it about me rather than him today.
Yeah.
And that's really a test, right, of what kind of guy he is. That, you know, he's about other people as well, and he's about putting people over and involving people. And you know, he said in the press conference, he mentioned people like Kevin Owens, because I think Owens was the one who introduced him to the Bucks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you think of the amount of egomaniacs who've been champions and top stars in wrestling in the past, we've met these people, we've interviewed these people, Kenny, haven't we, many times in the past, people who are entirely self-absorbed, egocentric, and they're only interested in talking about themselves. Cody is the antithesis of that, isn't he? He is. And he, you know, people wouldn't really blame him if he, you know, had a bit of an ego, especially given where he is in the business right now. But I mean, he is like such a breath of fresh air, isn't he?
He really is. And I thought this was just perfect. And the thing that I really love about this is that, you know, we're going to do PowerSlam on Thursday, and I have no idea what the next part of the story is for anybody. And that to me is exciting, that we don't know. This is a WrestleMania where we don't know who's going to be feuding with who, what's going to happen, but we're excited about what it's going to be next.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Raw tonight, SmackDown this Friday, there's going to be new things starting. Things that have happened previously will obviously play a part in what's about to happen next. But, you know, this is the start of the new booking calendar for WWE, always has been. And I'm very optimistic about the future of WWE. And we talked about this before, Kenny, this time last year after Cody lost. We weren't. We were like, oh my God, what happens next? And they were right to delay his title win until this year. You know, they absolutely were, as borne out by what happened over the weekend. But yeah, it's an exciting time for the company. Really looking forward to what happens next, Kenny.
Yes, well, and I echo all those sentiments. It's been so fun to cover this WrestleMania. You know, it's been it was such a great show. We hope you've enjoyed us covering it. And yeah, we look forward to being back on Thursday with the fallout from Raw. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame. We'll have no end of things to talk about. And we'll also be talking about whatever footage AEW are going to show of the CM Punk real-life brawl on this week's Dynamite. That is a real thing I am saying to you. So we will be covering all of that on Thursday. Oh my god!
Oh my god!
But yeah, you'll not want to miss it. So thanks for all your support. We really do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.